señalando que la administración demócrata estaría violando el Acta de Poderes de Guerra de 1973 por no pedir permiso al Congreso para bombardear Libia. A principios del mes, la Casa de Representantes aprobó una sanción a Obama por no pedir permiso al Congreso para autorizar la ofensiva en Libia. También fijó hasta el viernes el plazo para proveer un reporte sobre las operaciones en el país de África del Norte, sus costos e impactos en las ocupaciones de Irak y Afganistán. Miles de italianos celebraron el martes la derrota del primer ministro Silvio Berlusconi, luego de conocerse los resultados de una consulta popular. Rafael Cuesta, del colectivo Más Voces, reporta.
El 95% de la población italiana con derecho a voto lo ha hecho en contra de lo que proponía el primer ministro Silvio Berlusconi. Las cuatro derrotas en las consultas sobre el agua pública, las tarifas, energías e inmunidad para el primer ministro ponen a Berlusconi contra las cuerdas después de las elecciones municipales. 27 millones de italianos han dicho no a las leyes hechas a medida para que Berlusconi se libre de los juicios pendientes o permita que sus delitos prescriban antes. También han rechazado la permanencia de la energía nuclear, la privatización del agua y la propuesta del gobierno en materia de tarifas del servicio hídrico. Además, el referéndum es vinculante, ya que ha superado el 50% de votos necesarios. Hace 16 años que un referéndum no alcanzaba el quórum en Italia. Este lo ha logrado para marcar más el desgaste político de Berlusconi. En poco más de una semana, el Ejecutivo vuelve a examinarse. Esa vez no será en las urnas, sino en el Parlamento, donde en pleno se tratará de verificar si sigue habiendo mayoría parlamentaria. La posición de la Liga Norte, partido socio del gobierno, será determinante. El ministro para la Simplificación, Roberto Calderoli, de la Liga Norte, ha expresado su malestar asegurando que ya está harto de tantos bofetones por parte de la ciudadanía.
Our bets on entrepreneurs and on workers and on our families. We understand that there's strength in our diversity.
Barack Obama visitó Puerto Rico este martes para decirle al pueblo boricua que su presidencia tiene fe en los empresarios, en la familia y en la fuerza que genera la diversidad étnica en la Unión Americana. El primer mandatario busca la reelección y su visita a la isla no solo aspira a las donaciones financieras para sus gastos de campaña, sino al apoyo de como 4 millones de puertorriqueños que viven en los estados de Nueva York, Florida y Filadelfia. Eduardo Villanueva es presidente del Comité por los Derechos Humanos, organización con sede en San Juan, Puerto Rico. Él dice que la visita de Obama generó varias movilizaciones, aunque la destinada a darle la bienvenida al primer mandatario dejó mucho que desear.
Una de las que se convocó fue precisamente por el sector estadista para celebrar el Día de la Bandera y para recibir al presidente. Y curiosamente fue un fracaso, fue muy poca gente, básicamente empleados públicos que trabajan en el Senado y en la Cámara, pero no vino la militancia del partido que apoya a ese sector estadista.
El defensor de derechos humanos señala que los manifestantes independentistas no solo rebasaron a los proestadistas en número, sino también en la calidad de las demandas en beneficio de la población en general.
Una concentración muy nutrida, muy amplia del sector independentista, que además de reclamar la independencia y la descolonización para el país, reclamaba la excarcelación de uno de los prisioneros políticos más antiguos en el occidente, Oscar López Rivera, que lleva 30 años preso.
Barack Obama afirmó no haber olvidado su promesa de campaña de permitir a los boricuas decidir su estatus político como nación.
Entonces, como ellos hablan de los derechos humanos en el mundo y hablan de la democracia y la autodeterminación, pues tienen que figurar ante otros países que también propician un verdadero proceso de descolonización en Puerto Rico.
Manifestantes independentistas denunciaron acciones de aplicación selectiva de reglamentos y arbitrariedades por parte de la policía.
Es que un grupo aquí de compañeros quiere desplegar una pancarta como medio de protesta y apelando a la excarcelación de nuestros prisioneros políticos. Más sin embargo, la policía insular de este país, que responde a los intereses del imperio norteamericano, no nos deja hacer uso de esa libre expresión. expresión, ¿verdad?, a la cual tenemos derecho. Mas, sin embargo, al otro lado aquí de esta calle, un grupo de manifestantes arrastrados pro imperio norteamericano les permiten desplegar toda su pancarta de mentiras y de arrastramiento.
Líderes de organizaciones comunitarias se manifestaron para recordar a Obama que los boricuas enfrentan un índice de desempleo del 16%, mientras que cerca de la mitad de ellos vive debajo del nivel oficial de pobreza. Las multinacionales como las farmacéuticas Pfizer y Merck están abandonando la isla en busca de países con mano de obra más barata y más descuentos en sus impuestos. Obama prometió empleos para los desocupados en Puerto Rico y en Estados Unidos, pero boricuas como Irene Figueroa, graduada en leyes comparativas, declaró ante los medios que la visita de 5 horas del primer mandatario estadounidense no va a resolver los problemas de fondo. Puerto Rico ha sido colonia estadounidense desde 1898, aunque en términos legales se dice que es un territorio no incorporado. Los estadounidenses, como otros imperios y potencias coloniales, no tienen el menor interés en permitir que sus colonias logren su independencia, dice Villanueva, pues entre otros factores está el económico.
Ellos invierten más o menos 4 billones de dólares en este país y se llevan 32 billones de dólares. Es decir, es una relación comercial que le deja una ganancia de cerca de 28 billones de dólares.
Era Antonio Villanueva, presidente del Comité de Derechos Humanos, organización con sede en San Juan, Puerto Rico. Este lunes por la mañana, 10 activistas fueron arrestados por remover letreros que daban la bienvenida a Obama. El superintendente de la policía, José Figueroa, fue enfático al decir que una interrupción a la caravana del presidente no sería tolerada. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
La esperanza de un mundo mejor, porque ya las masas saben que se puede. Saben que efectivamente a través de su lucha sostenida, llena de sacrificios, que demanda heroicidades enormes, que demanda incluso años, pero que a través de todo eso se puede llegar a la victoria.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica. Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblossinfronteras@gmail.com.
El gobierno cubano dio a conocer un diario inédito del líder revolucionario Ernesto Guevara de la Serna, coincidiendo con el cumpleaños número 83 del Che. Diario de un combatiente, el título de la publicación, es una recopilación de manuscritos inéditos del guerrillero Ernesto Che Guevara, en el que se narran pasajes de la lucha rebelde en Cuba. Su viuda, Aleida Guevara March, estuvo en la presentación del diario del Che este martes.
¿Cuál es el propósito nuestro? Este, dar a conocer su obra, su pensamiento, su vida, para que el pueblo cubano y el mundo en general no lo tergiverse más, sino que lo conozcan tal como es.
Más de un centenar de jóvenes de diferentes países latinoamericanos se reúnen en La Habana para conmemorar el natalicio de Ernesto Guevara.
Un pueblo de pie nunca pierde su dignidad, envueltos en banderas marcharán y cantarán así.
El alcalde Carlos Hernández de Hialeah, municipio del condado de Miami-Dade, en la Florida, decretó oficialmente el 14 de junio como Día de Luis Posada Carriles, al tiempo que entregaba al terrorista internacional las llaves de la ciudad. El 14 de junio es tradicionalmente en Estados Unidos el Día Nacional de la Bandera, durante el cual se honra a las grandes figuras de la nación, desde George Washington hasta el reverendo Martin Luther King Jr.
Es una vergüenza, es una cachetada a todos los que luchan por la justicia, es una burla a todas las víctimas de Posada Carriles.
Alicia Rapko trabaja con el Comité Nacional para la Liberación de los 5 Cubanos.
No nos sorprende por un lado, pero por otro lado es realmente indignante la noticia.
Los conocedores de los numerosos actos de violencia cometidos por Luis Posada Carriles, agente de la CIA, durante 4 décadas, señalan que fue este, junto con Orlando Bosch, el responsable del atentado con explosivos contra un avión de pasajeros que quitó la vida a 73 personas. Además de ser torturador y asesino bajo órdenes de la Central de Inteligencia Norteamericana en Venezuela y América Central.
Posada Carriles, junto a muchos otros, son los terroristas del gobierno norteamericano, son los terroristas buenos. son los que trabajan para ellos, son los que han estado recibiendo salarios de la CIA. Hay una hipocresía porque se habla de la lucha contra el terrorismo mientras a los terroristas se los deja libre, y no solamente se los deja libre, sino que además se los celebra, se le entregan llaves de la ciudad, se los dejan pintar, les dejan hacer exposiciones de cuadros, venderlos, etcétera.
Alicia Shapko señala que la atmósfera de protección a terroristas que prevalece en la Florida explica por qué fueron penalizados los 5 cubanos que trataban de evitar actos de terrorismo en su país.
Muestra una vez más que los 5 cubanos jamás podían haber tenido un juicio justo en cualquiera de esos condados.
El acto de honor hacia el terrorista Luis Posada Carriles coincide con la conmemoración mundial del natalicio del doctor Ernesto Che Guevara de la Serna en Rosario, Argentina, en 1928. Alicia Shapko no tiene palabras de elogio para Barack Obama por permitir que Posada Carriles sea homenajeado mientras que el senador de Illinois busque su reelección presidencial.
La protección de Posada Carriles, darle refugio a este terrorista internacional, es una gran vergüenza para la administración de Obama. Es algo que vamos a seguir reclamándole, que vamos a seguir protestando.
El gobierno estadounidense continúa protegiendo a Luis Posada Carriles al tiempo que la Fundación para la Nueva América se jacta de estar trabajando con el Departamento de Estado norteamericano para asistir a disidentes políticos de otros países en su lucha por la justicia y la democracia. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
And welcome to Bathurst Pierce Broadsides. Coming up next, many, many interviews and lots of stuff from the streets of downtown Santa Cruz. Stay tuned.
I say the hungry should have food. I speak for many when I say no one should have 7 homes. While some don't have any, though I may find myself stranded in some strange place with naught but a vapid stare, I remember the world and I know we are everywhere. I say the time for the rich, it will come. Let me count the ways, victories or hints of the future. Havana, Caracas, Chiapas, Buenos Aires. How many people are wanting and waiting and fighting for their share? They hide in their ivory towers, but we are everywhere. Religions and prisons and races, borders and nations, FBI agents and congressmen and corporate radio stations. They try to keep us apart, but we find each other, and the rulers are always aware that they're a tiny minority, and we are everywhere. With every bomb that they drop, every home they destroy, every land they invade, comes a new generation from under the rubble saying, we are not afraid. They will pretend we are few, but with each child that a billion mothers bear, comes the next demonstration that we are everywhere. We are everywhere.
And that was David Rovics, We Are Everywhere. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and the name of the show is, as mentioned before, Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Robux has actually composed a song called The Ballad of Lake Eola about the struggle of Foodnot bombs and associated sympathizers to restore the right to share free food with a political message in Florida. This is a battle that I've talked about on the air before. We fought successfully for the moment here in Santa Cruz and in San Francisco, but apparently has to be fought and fought again and again. And I'll be playing, if I have time, which I may not today because it's only a two-hour show, and I'll be either back on Sunday or next Thursday, I'm not sure which, with more from of the same kind of programming that you're going to be hearing. Interviews from the street, commentary from me, perhaps phone calls from you. That's up to you guys out there and you gals. Phone number here is 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC. Call in if you'd like, and we'll talk about the issues I'm raising. I'm going to begin with a tape that I played before, but I think needs to be played again. It is a tape of a man who reports being beaten by an officer downtown, struck three times, actually says five times, with a club. And I've got two other witness reports on that, so it doesn't seem to be, it seems to be a pretty substantially authenticated story. And I've also talked to a sergeant about the issue briefly, and he acknowledged that he's gotten reports about it, or he's heard about the issue. That's the case of Officer Winston, and a man beaten at New Leaf Market, or actually outside New Leaf Market on the sidewalk a couple of weeks back. I'm going to play that again because I think we need to be looking out for this kind of thing. We need to be documenting it. We need to be holding our police department accountable.
Right, we're down here at Pacific Avenue at about 10 o'clock on May 26, 2004, Thursday evening, at front of New Leaf, and we're talking with
Curtis, Chad.
And Curtis, you had an encounter with the police last night.
It was the night before, and yeah, boy did I. It was Officer Winton, for no reason, used aggressive force against me, beat me with a billy club several times in the leg. It's been hard for me to walk, and it was very uncalled for. All I was doing was asking what's going on here, arms up like that, like, you know, peace, you know, and... And the next thing you know, he's grabbed me by the arm and beat me with his club.
What did he say to you, if anything?
He forced me to the ground. He said, get down, I guess, and he beat me. I didn't hear actually anything what he said, but you know, it happened so quick. You know, I was just surprised about the whole thing. And then he tries to put this phony thing on. I asked, he's not the officer that took me to the hospital. Another officer did. And I go, what's the charges here? And he goes, drunk in public, resisting arrest, and assaulting an officer. And I go, you are out of your mind. I did not. I have three witnesses and several people that have camera phones that saw the whole thing. And they're all ready to go to court with me on this because it was very uncalled for.
So this was about what time of night?
6:45.
And this was in front of Borders?
Yes, it was.
And you say, are any of the witnesses here who saw this?
No, they're not.
How many people observed it?
Several. There's, you know, music playing here on the corner, so there's, you know, a crowd around. And it says, I've talked to three, four people that witnessed the whole thing, and they're all ready to go to court with me on it.
What were you doing when Officer Winston approached?
What was I doing?
Yeah.
Standing, minding my own business, listening to the music.
And what did he say to you initially?
Initially, it's hard to remember, but, you know, I'd had a few drinks, but it was uncalled for, his whole conduct. I was not bothering anybody, and the whole crowd got, you know, really upset with what he was doing. They were all screaming at him. I've talked to several people, and they were all yelling, you know, I wasn't bothering anyone. So what, I had a couple of beers, big deal.
You're massaging your left shin. Where did he strike you?
Right where you're saying I'm rubbing my leg.
How many times did he strike you?
What I was told was I was hit five times before he took me to the ground, and then he hit me more.
And were other officers involved in this?
I was told several came as backup, yes.
didn't see them?
Well, the one that took me to the hospital, yes. That can count for two, but the others, if there was any others, they just sat in the car or just sat and observed. But as far as I know, it's just the two.
And the names of the witnesses?
We're going to have a brief musical break here. I mentioned the Ballad of Lake Eola. That's the Florida town where 21 people have so far been arrested on four nights of feeding people, sharing food at that park in Florida. Let's listen to this, assuming I can download it. And we'll be back with more of Curtis Chad, sorry. Taking a moment to download, and it looks like we're here and about to go.
In the land of Minnie Mouse and Mickey, things are getting icky since the municipality of Orlando, Florida passed a moratoria against feeding hungry people in their city. The mayor said with a scoff, we'd all be better off without these food terrorists lurking like a shark. So he did declare, Samaritans beware, no more feeding hungry people in the park. And if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and sent to jail. Yes, if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and sent to jail. There are many things you can do when you're passing through that are much more acceptable than that. Go on amusement rides, eat things that are fried by each one of your kids a little hat. You can stay in a hotel, act like everything is swell, go to SeaWorld and hear the seals bark. But whatever else you have in mind, you will be in a bind if you feed the hungry people in the park. And if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and go to jail. Yes, if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and go to jail. Yes, you can drink some wine, have yourself a good time, have a good vacation, then retire. But if you wanna stir up trouble, if you deign to pop the bubble and try to feed the hungry people of the Shire, in such a public place, we can't suffer such disgrace, though the logic may seem a little stark. What would the neighbors say? Where will the children play if you keep feeding hungry people in the park? So if you do, you'd better post your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and go to jail. Yes, if you do, you'd better raise your bail, 'cause you'll be fined $500 and sent to jail.
And that's a song recorded by David Rovix, the world-famous political song singer. I guess what else can you sing but songs? And it's available online. It's the Ballad of Lake Eola. Wow. Anyway, as I said, the arrests are continuing there, and hopefully we'll be hearing more about that. A report from a co-founder of Food Not Bombs and on-the-spot observer and criminal food felon Keith McHenry, or Katzenjammer Keith, as I like to call him after the cartoon character of the early 20th century, Katzenjammer Kids, mischief-making of the most important, serious, and touching kind. Anyway, let's get back to Chad Curtis and his account of what he describes as a beating by SCPD officer Winston on May 24th, around 6:45 in front of New Leaf Market. Witnesses, please contact me at 423-4833, 423-4833. That's the off-air number, or you can get a hold of me or with any other people from HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Curtis is homeless. He's a big guy with a big backpack, and according to a second witness, Winston apparently was giving him contradictory orders. Take off your backpack, and at the same time, get down on the ground. And he couldn't do both at the same time, so Winston assisted him with multiple blows to the legs with his baton. Again, this according to another witness who I spoke with. Anyway, here's more of Curtis Chad's own account.
With cameras, but their names I have not come up with yet.
Has anybody, have any of the witnesses talked to you today about being willing to come forward?
Yes, the older man, John, he said so himself today. He stopped me there on Laurel Street, and he said the whole thing was uncalled for, that he'd be willing to go all the way with me. I just have to write all these people's names down. I hadn't had the pen. I didn't get my property back till this afternoon because they only release it on Tuesdays and Thursdays. They take me to the jail, and they release me 6 hours later, and my property is not there. It's ridiculous.
And were you, do you have a court date? Are you accused of anything?
Yes, I have a court date for next month. I'm accused of, drunk in public and resisting arrest, I guess. And,
is there an assaulting an officer charge?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. I have two different field arrest reports in my pocket. One includes a third charge there, but the other does not.
Who wrote the two reports?
And they're both on Officer Winton's writing.
Winston?
Winston, yes, that's it. And it's funny, when I was in county jail, and the cop told me, assaulting officer, I'm going, no way. And being released 6 hours later, something seemed a little funny to me. I go, if you assaulted an officer here, you would not be released 6 hours later. No way.
So,
he's trying to make a phony little statement there, trying to cover his... trying to cover his actions by writing a phony thing saying I assaulted him, which is,
what do you think was his motivation? Because why do you think he even approached you in the first place?
He doesn't like homeless people, I'd suspect.
You're homeless yourself?
Yes, I am.
Have you had previous encounters with Officer Winston?
Never before.
And hopefully never again?
That's right. Except for in court when I sue him.
Now, were you taken to the hospital to check your injuries?
Yes, I was. And boy, they were happy that my leg was not broken. Boy, were they happy it was not broken.
What did they say the damage was?
Well, they gave me no medication for the pain, nothing at all. Nothing. I've been walking around for a couple of days here. I'm homeless. I have to walk. And they gave me nothing to cover this pain. And that seemed ridiculous. It's not right. Just not right.
Does the medical report say you have any injuries?
They did the x-ray, and I had previously broken his leg a couple of years ago, and they came back and they go, was your leg previously broken? I went, yeah, and the doctor was so happy. Oh, then there's nothing wrong. And that's it. He gave me no further advice or anything. And
name of the doctor?
That I wouldn't have on hand right now. It's an E-room at Dominican, ER-room at Dominican.
You have, two reports by Winston?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I was going, why do I have two field reports like that? Seems that something's not right there.
Maybe he wrote it up once, and then he figured he could do a better job and wrote it up again.
Yeah. Probably something like that.
What's your last name?
My last name is Chad.
So it's, and your full name is?
Curtis Lee Chad.
And your court date is?
Next month, June 26th, I do believe.
Probably an arraignment.
Oh, yes. I'll be talking to lawyers previously before that, and I'm going to round up all these people and get their names and numbers, and they'll be ready to be subpoenaed to come into court with me. Every one of them. They've already... So I didn't approach them. They came to me.
Do you have any objection to my playing this tape on the air?
Go for it.
All right. Thanks, Chad. I'm going to give you a card in case you want to get in touch with me if something like this happens again or you hear it impacting somebody else, happening to somebody else.
I've heard some rumors about this man that he's had some encounters with others down here. And what I've been told actually today, Rico there himself, Ricardo, that there's a class action suit going on right now about stuff like this. And I just might get on that wagon myself.
I hadn't heard of it, but that sounds like a good idea if that's happening. Again, we've been talking with?
Curtis Chad.
Thanks, Curtis.
And if others have had experience with Officer Winston, either of the violent sort, or maybe not necessarily so violent a sort, but of a sort to indicate some kind of police misconduct or abuse, please give a call to the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833. I described from old records of earlier Bathurst Spears Broadside shows, which my records are actually incomplete. I have a lot of the shows actually still exist on the audio form archive, but some of them have not been written up in summary form for descriptions, unfortunately. But many of them have. They're online at a website that is currently under repair, I hope. That's the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. But a backup copy I have, I was reading from Winston's at least accounts of people who've reported abuse by Winston, either on them or people they witnessed. And it's quite a list of incidents. And there was a particular situation where we were concerned about Winston's violence. I think it was the summer of 2008 or 2009 against a man named Corey. And there were threats and violence reported. And then this guy kind of disappeared, and I haven't heard from him. Hope that he's okay. Ditto with Curtis Chad. I haven't heard much from him in the last week or two. So I'm hoping that he's doing okay. If anybody witnessed this incident May 24th in front of New Leaf Market about 6:45 in the evening, do give me a call, 423-4833. Or you can call in on the air and talk about it if you'd like publicly. 427-3772, 427-3772 is the call-in number here in case you want to get into it. And that said, let's turn to some more street interviews, and away we'll go as I try to catch up on a backlog of interviews I've not had the opportunity or taken the opportunity to play. Any minute now, they'll be coming.
27th, 2011, I'm standing here on the sidewalk in back of Zachary's about 11:20 with...
Forky Ravioli.
Or Mandolin Mark, as I sometimes call him. And Forky, you, shall we say, observed untoward behavior by a certain police officer a few nights ago?
Well, it seems like anymore I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time, right? You know, now it seems like everywhere I go, I'm in the wrong place. In Santa Cruz, anywhere I go is the wrong place, the wrong time. So we're standing there playing music.
In front of Borders?
In front of Borders, yes.
How, what time of night?
Oh, stay. It was, I think it was like 4-ish, you know, afternoon, late afternoon.
And what day was it?
It was, I'll have to figure this one out. You know, it was
3 days.
Yeah, 3 days ago.
And what did you see?
I don't know the exact date.
What happened?
Okay, so we're playing, right? And Officer Winston pulls a squad car in behind the little band there on the corner, and we think, oh shit, he's coming after us. And but he runs right past us and intercepts Mr. I don't remember his name.
Chad, I think his name is.
Yeah. And so he's walking down Pacific Avenue, Mr. Chad.
I'm not sure if it's his first or his last, but yeah.
Okay, we'll call him Mr. Chad for reference, okay? So Mr. Chad's like walking down the Pacific Avenue with his pack, right? And he's passing, we're right at the corner of Borders at I call it You Got Avenue and Give Me Street, right? that corner. And
so actually what this witness is saying is it didn't happen in front of New Leaf, but across the street from New Leaf at Borders.
West Central.
Yeah, okay. So Officer Winston pulls his squad car up on the curb, kind of, and gets out and runs past us and intercepts Mr. Chad walking down Pacific, right? And he this happens, like, right in front of the band. So everybody in the band and everybody that's watching the band sees this, right? And I hear that there's some videotape. Okay, so Officer Winston does the... how do we say it? The universal, like, you know, up in his Mr. Chad's grill burst, right? And then he backs off a little bit, demands that Mr. Chad take off his pack. And Mr. Chad goes, "What is this all about?" Okay. And then Officer Winston just gets agitated at that question. And then the audience that was watching us play starts going, "Sir, you have to tell them what this is all about," you know. And Winston just got really agitated and pulled out his telescoping billy club that has this disc at the end of it, right? And he started, like, whacking at Mr. Chad's knee, right? And managed to, you know, I could hear these land, you know, and it was, like, painful to watch. It was like, you know, like PTSD central, you know. It was, in fact, like, the kids at the cookie place were watching this from across the street going, "God, this, we can tell from over here that this was, like, unnecessary," right? And they were, like, traumatized by it, you know. It's,
how long did it go on for?
The actual torture session went on. It was three good hits, you know, and he never did, you know, like, tell Mr. As far as, you know, I mean, they had him in handcuffs, and him going, "I think I need an ambulance." So I'm sure they took him to the hospital. Well, okay, I'm speculating at this point. They took him to the hospital. And then they probably released him there in his hospital bed, you know, so that he would get the bill for all this.
So how many cops were involved?
First, it's Officer Winston, and I'm wondering, why isn't he, like, calling for backup, you know? You know, you would think, okay, he's got, like, you know, this big guy, and I start to think about Napoleon complex or something. You know, he's like, you know, "Watch me, like, you know, take down this guy that's, like, a lot bigger than me," you know.
And how many cops eventually showed up?
Well, so he after he'd started, like, whacking away on the guy, wait, I may have this wrong, but it seems like after he started whacking away at the guy, then he called for backup.
Right. And how many police showed?
Oh, about 20.
How many cars did you count?
I wasn't really counting police cars, you know. I'd just been, you know, like, we were all traumatized by this.
Did the police interview people regarding what they saw?
Yeah, they interviewed me.
And which officer interviewed you, do you know?
I don't know. But he assured me that I'd be getting a call from a civilian oversight board.
Which hasn't happened yet.
Hasn't happened yet.
Forky, there's probably more I want to talk to you about, but I have a starving person here who wants to go eat, and there's someone waiting for me. So, thank you. We've been talking with
Forky Ravioli.
Thank you, Senor Ravioli. All right. Well, it is about.
That was only one of at least three witnesses. I've gotten two detailed accounts, and then, of course, Curtis Chad's own account. If anybody saw this incident, either again in front of New Leaf or in front of Borders, on May 24th. Where an officer reportedly pulled a car up on a curb, came out, began whacking at a large guy with a backpack, and then the guy was taken to jail taken away in an ambulance. Please do give me a call, or let's talk about this on the air, 427-3772. Something similar to this happened to you, or have you seen anything similar in the last couple weeks? It's really important that members of the community act to stop this kind of stuff, because if we don't, it will, I think, happen with increasing frequency. Officer Winston, as far as I know, has not been disciplined. He's not been restrained. He's not been put on desk duty. Nothing like that has happened. And full disclosure, I haven't talked to Officer Winston about this incident, though I've had casual encounters with him since. It's not that I'm afraid he's going to hit me, although I suppose anything is possible. He's never physically assaulted me. As I said, I have heard accounts of his assaulting other people from the people themselves and from, I believe, other witnesses. But this is the most elaborate and detailed account I have yet heard regarding Officer Winston. So if people know about this, please do give a call to 423-4833 off-air, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, or give a call here to the studio and let's talk about it, 427-3772.
2:15, 2:30, 2:30 actually. I'm in front of Borders where we have the longest.
City Council 2012.
Yes, the longest line in history, or at least a relatively long Rene Curry beanies and burritos line.
I'm leaning. 3-day weekend with the holiday before the first.
Indeed, the Memorial Day weekend. And we're talking to none other than.
The notorious Mrs. V.
And you, of course, are a poet, activist, and a state traveler. And recently you were in Sacramento.
I wasn't in Sacramento.
You just heard about something happening?
Yeah, about that the homeless had done a class action suit against Sacramento.
You got your property taken here.
Right, here.
Oh, well, that's not news. I thought that they were taking property in Sacramento.
No, it was here.
Santa Cruz police wouldn't do that.
The reason I'm obviously more interested in what's going on here, but Sacramento recently had a successful lawsuit. Actually, it's been 4 years now since the Kincaid decision, and that lawsuit directed police and city authorities to not steal or destroy homeless property, or steal and destroy it, but if they confiscate it, to store it so that it can be later reclaimed. That's something that the Santa Cruz Police Department. And at least the Parks and Rec Department, and I've heard anecdotal incidents about the Santa Cruz Police Department doing this too, but with less regularity and bald overtness than the Parks and Rec Department, which apparently honestly continues to assert. We don't have to save homeless property. We just will tag something in the forest, and then we'll come back and send the crews to destroy it if it isn't claimed, which is not, of course, what you do with abandoned property, unless, of course, the property belongs to people who are homeless, who are, as we know, less than human beings and need to be taught a good lesson to leave the Santa Cruz area. One way to do this is to strip them of their property and perhaps of their survival gear. I'm not suggesting this is necessarily the overt acknowledged motivation, but it's the impact, of course. And one has to conclude to some extent that this can't be ignored as the reality and the consequence, and therefore it's what's really being intended. If you intend the action, then you intend the consequence, particularly if you do so as an institutional policy over a long period of time, as the Santa Cruz Parks and Rec Department has done.
It wasn't the Santa Cruz PD. It was First Alarm and the park rangers.
Well, maybe they need your stuff.
And I got them to stop taking somebody else's stuff by informing them that if they post a 3-day notice and they come back in 3 days, then they come back 3 days later and there's new stuff, they don't get to go on the old notice. They have to post a new notice. And they stopped picking up this person's belongings and posted it, but it was too late. My stuff was gone. I had moved my stuff because of a 3-day notice, and when they came along to clean up my old camp, they found it underneath the bushes with grasses put on top of it and took all of my clothing, all of my gear, photographs of my kids, everything I owned.
You can't fool them, in other words.
Apparently.
You're very, very clever. So what have you done to recover your stuff?
I can go dig at the dump, the ranger told me.
Really?
For the photographs of my 2-year-old, I can go dig at the dump.
That's great. Indeed, this, of course, is in contrast. I mentioned Sacramento because I'd earlier thought you'd said this was, Sacramento has changed its policies, supposedly, because of the Lehrer lawsuit. And
actually, yeah, that is the Lehrer lawsuit in Sacramento and the Kincaid decision in Fresno, so. Those are two cities much more conservative, you would think, than Santa Cruz, but because the courts have forced them to pay attention to civil rights issues that Santa Cruz's Mayor Coonerty and former Mayor Rotkin and the entire city council and Martine Bernal, the city manager, blithely and abusively ignore, those two cities are far more protective in their own limited stumbling way than Santa Cruz's. Ditto with Los Angeles and San Diego around the sleeping van.
Similarly, also because of state law, if we had someone like yourself who sounds like you have a pretty good handle on what's happening, apparently you're defending other people's stuff and not your own, or weren't successful in defending your own on this occasion, documenting this kind of seizure of property, what kind of documentation do you have to the skeptical judge that it was your property that was taken and that they took it? Why wasn't it perhaps an errant band of homeless criminals stealing your property? She grins and snickers at that one, folks.
Do you have another disposable camera that I can photograph truckloads? They're taking out truckloads of homeless people's stuff every day, park rangers.
If you get to the Huff meeting on Wednesday, I'll get you a disposable camera.
Yes, they're taking out truckloads every other day.
You also have to have a notebook and note down when you take the photo, who it's taken of. Otherwise, it won't do any good in court. If you're going to do that, you have to do it that way.
And not a problem.
And again, I'm not even sure if it'll be that effective, but it's a good start if you want to start that way. Mrs. B, you might even write a few lines of gloomy, grim poetry.
And actually, that is an invitation I extend to anyone interested in helping with that Huff project, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is that if you want to help document what the what's actually happening as park rangers are destroying homeless property, come to a Huff meeting on Wednesday. That's at 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific. 10 o'clock, 703 Pacific. Or give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF if you want to be a part of this project. And you can become a part of it, and perhaps you can help to secure in Santa Cruz the rights that have at least been acknowledged and demanded by a court, by two courts in Fresno and in Sacramento.
About all this.
No, I haven't, well, not gloomy and grim lately, sort of hopeful lately.
You do look kind of hopeful, actually.
Very strange. I don't always get to where I'm going, and I can't always remember where I've been. I know I've done 1,000 things, and most of them a sin. I know I spent way too much time chasing after him. I know that all who wander are not lost, and I don't have to get what I want at any or all cost, and I don't always have to be the boss, but I keep trying. I know the freedom of speech isn't always so free, and that sometimes that people want me to be anybody but me, and you can't always be what you want to be, and it's easier to give in than hang on to your beliefs, but you know I've never made anything easy on me, so I guess I'll just keep hanging on by the skin of my teeth.
Nice.
You could interview her. I'm not interviewing.
Well, if she wants to be interviewed, she looks like she's busy. But you have been interviewed before. We're here at the Rene and Scott event here. Well, I'll try interviewing her if you want.
Yeah, that probably work better.
But it's hard. She often gets distracted. This is the line has gone down to very few number of people, and we're talking with
Rene.
Rene, where's all the food? I mean, were you able to serve the community, or did some people leave with their tummies empty and their hands empty as well?
Papa, what do you think? No, I think it was like loaves and fishes. I was sitting there worried about the line because of how long it was, but I think everybody got a burrito, huh?
There were probably three people that didn't.
Bummer.
So you failed again, eh, Curry?
I failed.
Miserable woman, you.
Yeah.
Any reports on, should we say, I don't know, praise from Cynthia Matthews or Ryan Coogan?
No, I haven't heard.
That's a joke, of course, because both those two, Coonerty the mayor and Matthews the former mayor, have Matthews has attacked food services at the Red Church, again, next to which she owns property across the street next to Jack's Hamburgers, the historic house there. And Ryan Coonerty has actually gone out of his way to criticize Rene Curry's food operation, weekly food giveaway in front of Borders.
One word. Nothing.
And, of course, this is Memorial Weekend where we celebrate the veterans of our country. How are you feeling? Are you feeling filled with pride, perhaps?
I haven't really thought that much about it.
Well, you know, this...
Sorry about that. I just am focused on what I'm doing. And
indeed, as you should be. Any reports from the street you want to pass on to the community from your vantage point here on the sidewalk once a week on Sundays?
Well, we really need your support because we're completely out of socks and sleeping bags. So that would be what I would want to.
And how can folks reach you?
They can go to my blog, which has a nonprofit PayPal donation link at www.ronecurry.com or ronewebstercurry at Facebook and just see what we do here in Santa Cruz, because I don't want anybody to blindly support us, but I think it's a worthy cause. And we're building relationships. I mean, you're always going to need socks, you're always going to need sleeping bags, but we're building relationships with them.
Any report from your old mentor, Father Joel Miller of the infamous Calvary Episcopal Church, under assault for, socializing with the poor without a permit?
No, that all just got postponed, I think, till September.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
He, of course, is being accused by ex-Mayor Matthews of enabling the riffraff, in this case, abusing a parishioner and not adequately dealing with the homeless question, as the Fuhrer might have put it.
Yeah, which is all totally false charges. We've watched from a front row seat the whole thing, but anyway, he's still doing Coffee House, and so that's a victory.
I hope you're not.
Huh?
No, we don't.
We're completely out.
Customer number four, apparently.
Yeah.
That's a disappointing customer. Anyway.
Yeah.
The point here was that there was an extremely long food line on the day before Memorial Day, the Sunday in front of Borders, I guess May 29th, I'm guessing it was. And that that day there were a number of people who didn't get fed, though I guess Renee mentioned the next week she was getting more donations than before, but apparently there are, I've read this elsewhere, that the number of hungry people is increasing significantly every month. I don't have the specific stats for Santa Cruz, which, of course, is our beat and really the most important thing for us. But it says something, along with the failing businesses and the increasingly frantic use of police to try to lure in money from the wealthy at the knick-knack shops on Pacific Avenue. I guess today the latest was... Well, we'll let the dogs back on Pacific Avenue, which the police are doing anyway, because wealthy people or upper-middle-class people with dogs don't get hassled by the cops, whereas poor people do, and they get ticketed, and they even get their dogs confiscated on occasion. So times are tough, getting tougher, and the city council is adopting a no meaningful policies to deal with this. Instead, more police repression and more scapegoating of poor and homeless people.
Any other?
Can't have water, tea, and paper towels. Yeah.
There you are. There's always the shiny side of the coin, the sunny side of the sky.
About to give my sandwich away because I feel bad.
Not customer number five.
I feel really bad. Yeah.
I'm afraid there are many people showing up that you have not been able to feed. How does this make you feel about that great Fuhrer in the sky?
Well, I can only do what we can do, and it just seems like the line's getting bigger and bigger every week. So all of the sudden, though, you know, it used to be 60 was sufficient.
It's the end of the month, as Mrs. B has pointed out.
That's true.
And presumably things will drop next week when everybody gets, or some people get some kind of check.
That's right. I forgot about that. You're absolutely right.
So have no fear. Remember, everything takes care of itself. Santa Cruz takes care of its own, and all is right in the world.
Yes, and nobody's starving here.
Certainly
not. No. So.
There could be some people in jail, dying of different things, but hey, you know, and aside from that, well, here you have another, a local who wishes to
talk with you.
Who knows?
Well, thank you, Robert. I appreciate it anytime you let people know what we're doing down here.
And I appreciate your telling us.
Thank you.
And we're downtown on Pacific Avenue. About 4:30, in front of
the New Leaf Theater. As I said, we're having quite a crowd around the force.
That's the New Leaf Market, actually.
Drummers and one man on drums and one little girl dancing. It's Howdy the Bellboys CDs, $10. Might be reasonable. I'm gonna check it out. We're talking with
Catherine Matthian.
Catherine, you are a bell girl.
I'm a bell girl, yeah.
Do you also play, or are you just a manager? Or?
I just help them out when I can.
You just run things.
Yep. They listen to me for some reason.
And where are you all from?
We're from Portland, Oregon.
And are you doing this in every city, passing, stopping on the streets?
We're here, and then tomorrow we'll be in Santa Barbara, and then they have a show on the 11th in L.A.
And you just came from San Francisco?
Yep.
And what's your average take on an afternoon like this?
How much do they make? On a good day, about $300 or $400, hopefully.
How many hours to do that?
6 or 7.
And any problems with police or authorities in any particular town?
Usually they're pretty nice and just remind us of the rules. And
whoa,
we don't really have a lot of problems other than that.
When are you going to pick up an instrument and join the gang? You're pausing on that one.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
All righty. We've been talking with
Catherine Battalion.
Thanks, Catherine. And how can people catch music online from this group?
They can get on the website, bellboysband.com, and also on Facebook, The Bellboys PDX.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So I'm here in front of Joe's Pizza, where we're across the street from the Groovin' Band that's thumping away there, and I'm talking with
Casey Livingood.
Casey, you're out on the sidewalk. You're kind of an employee serving soup from a threefold container kettle, traveling hot plate. How's tricks?
How's what?
Are you getting much in the way of soup samplers?
Yeah, I guess so.
Do most of the samplers go inside after our sampling, or pass on with a sneer?
Some go inside, some just walk on, some, yeah.
Sure. A little of this, a little of that. And
yeah, a little bit of everything.
It is a Sunday, and of course, I guess it's a tourist summer coming up, but you say that you observed a new kind of cooperation between the so-called hospitality yellow jackets and the first alarm security?
Oh, yeah, they were just walking side by side for about a half hour or an hour, as far as I could see. And I watched them walk across the street and talk to about three or four
criminal leaners,
of course, you know, homeless individuals, and I'm not sure what they said, but they picked up their bags and just stood there.
So in other words, they had been seated or leaning, and they took a more upright position?
Of course. And yeah, so there you go. They're just standing. I guess they were told they can't lean their stuff up against the building. So
I'm not sure that that's actually a crime.
Or lean themselves up against
more of a fashion.
It.
How is the soup, folks?
It's good. I actually got a ticket for sitting against the building.
How long ago?
Just a couple days.
Well, I know you can get a ticket for sitting, but you can't get a ticket for leaning.
Really?
No, it's not legal. It is illegal to sit down on the ground,
yeah,
because we know that hurts the sidewalk if you do that. There's to cause cracks, eruptions, fungus, that sort of thing.
I guess.
Where has your butt been? Well, consider that.
My butt has been
with you all the time.
It's been with me, yes.
I mean, you know, we don't want the riffraff like yourself cluttering up the streets, you understand?
I understand.
And what is your name?
Mallory.
And you are with?
Vinny.
And did you also get a citation for sitting on the sidewalk?
I've got plenty of other unreasonable citations from Officer Winston and Officer
Clark.
Yes, they suck. They should be fired.
Now, when was the last...
Put me on that one if you hear this, buddy. I hate you.
Now, when was the last time you got a citation?
I got a loitering ticket for walking through a parking garage about 2 hours later because they didn't like where I was. I don't think you can get a loitering ticket 2 hours later just because the cop feels like giving it to you after they already had to talk to you. I don't think that's legal.
And which garage was it?
The one down there at the opposite, the end of Pacific, close to the River Street.
And were you standing, sitting, leaning, talking, chatting?
I walked through the parking garage. They said, don't be in the parking garage or you can get a loitering ticket. Then I was all the way at CVS, and they saw me, and they were like, I think I'm going to give you a loitering ticket for being in that parking garage 2 hours ago.
Well, but you gave them an opportunity to reflect, to think about the situation. You, in essence, assisted them in doing their job.
Yes.
You feel proud about that?
I'm so very proud. I hope they get that big fat check at the end of the week.
And how long ago was this act of charity on your part?
About a month and a half ago.
And what about you? How long ago did you get a ticket?
Just a couple of weeks.
And this was a sit-on-the-sidewalk ticket?
Yeah. I was just kicking it with some homies sitting on the sidewalk.
And who gave you the ticket?
Winston.
Officer Winston. Again, I think he's pushing to, you know, really get a better grip on the situation.
He's just angry because his wife bangs other girls.
Now, do you know this because you know his wife, or is this simply a rude comment on your part?
I banged his wife.
Officer Winston, take note. So,
there he is.
Motherfucker. Anyway, we got to be somewhere.
We've been talking with
Mallory
and
Devin.
Is this okay to put this on the radio?
Yeah.
Yes, please put
this
it on
the radio.
Oh, yeah. All right, but do we get an interview with anybody's wife is the question.
I do.
I have no idea.
You want the full story next time we talk to you.
For sure. I'll be talking to you later then.
Hey, thank you.
Take care.
All right.
You know, I actually think some of these interviews have been previously played perhaps about a week ago, but, well, here they are again, and particularly the ones involving the violence around the alleged violence of Officer Winston are important. You know, these personal allegations about, you know, I slept with Winston's wife, well, you know, not any of my business, not any of anybody's business. But they show, you know, I guess the extent of the anger that Winston's behavior is creating downtown among some folks.
Okay, again, it's Saturday. It's June 6, 2011, Monday, overcast, and we're at Subway about 12:30 in the afternoon, and I'm talking with
Mark Beckner.
And Mark, you say that a guy named Forrest at the Homeless Service Center lot was having some civil rights problem?
Yeah, he's been on the lot for quite some time. I've been homeless now for about 18 months after my vehicle was impounded for expired tags of 7 months by an officer, Hardcastle State Park Police, representing the Lighthouse State Park, who also, 10 days after impounding my vehicle, Easter morning at 0:45 in the morning, wrote me a ticket for camping in the very woods that he made me homeless in. So I've been strongly proactive in what's going on here now, 14 months later, after being forced into my homelessness. Been in the armory, been in the loft, and now in the River Street shelter. Have formulated with the groups there because they're doing some really atrocious things. I've told them many times that you wouldn't treat your children like this, but they continue to do so.
Give me an example.
What I think is atrocious that I brought up with Nancy Liu, who's the director of the loft, because she heard that I was staging an anarchist movement, and that was the rumor mill. I says, once again, in the rumor mill, out the other end, a pile of stuff. And I spoke with her. She says, well, we should have a community meeting. She says, I understand you're quite upset about some things. I says, no, I'm just the voice of reason that has self-esteem enough to speak up about these things that we think are wrong. We live here. You don't. And I just gave her one example, and that was a couple of months ago, the time factor I have documented but don't have on me. One example that I gave her was the fact that the mailroom is only open from 10 to 4 Monday through Friday, and those people that have jobs have no ability to access their mail any other time. It's closed on the weekends. And I says, that's just one of the many, many things around here we would like to see changed. And she at that time says, well, we should have a community meeting. So I talked with Letitia, who is the director of Page Smith, and Monica, whom Nancy Lou directed me to speak with. It probably took them about 3 weeks for the meeting to kind of come through. Finally, I had emailed Monica on follow-up and followed through on that, saying I just wanted to be the mediator of homeless representatives, and she said it was a good idea. She did host this meeting, I believe it was a little over a week ago, a town meeting of all us homeless people and the entire staff, to include family shelter, all the paid employees that direct services there towards us homeless folks. The meeting was productive. You can't break all your eggs at once to make omelet. You have to take change slowly, which was fine. But after probably an hour and 15 minutes, Monica was continuing her song and dance, and I brought it up the fact that, which is also recorded because I recorded the minutes on my digitized voice recorder, the fact that we wanted less, something to the effect of that we wanted less talk and more walk.
What kind of talk, if anything, came? How many homeless people actually attended that meeting?
You know, it's interesting is because I've brought this up over and over and over again to the people and powers that be there, that nobody reads anything on that lot because all you have posted are rules and regulations, and they're tired of reading your rules and regulations. There was only one single flyer, as I understand, because I had been banned from the lot for gardening.
Gardening?
Yeah.
Without a permit?
Yeah, without a permit.
What? Were you gardening, sir?
I was gardening the entire lot. I did more in a week than they'd done there in 3 years. I brought in 10 yards of cedar chips. I saw them grinding up a tree. I asked Daniel, who is the director of lot services or something to that effect, if we could bring him in. He said, yeah, no problem. So I had been doing this for about a week, pruning bushes from 7 to 8 o'clock in the morning because there's nothing else to do during that time while you're waiting for breakfast. So I was pulling weeds and trimming trees and gardening. I made it and beautified it. Well, I went to go fix the sprinklers because we had a real hot spell here about a month and a half ago, and I thought all my work was going to go to waste. Well, I'd already been directed to handle all those things and been affirmed that I could do it, and Jenny, who has now been moved from the volunteer director and lot, has been moved to the family shelter. She was one that had me removed from the lot, and actually they called the police on me because I had moved over to the family shelter because I'd been banned from doing any good stuff at the for the loft. And so I was at the family shelter figuring, well, I'll help the family shelter by doing gardening. That has nothing to do with the loft. I've been banned from that portion. Well, at 7:30 in the morning, I was banned from that. That was on a Monday or a Friday. They've got the paperwork trail on it.
Are you still banned?
Currently, no. But Saturday, I had a... I wouldn't say a confrontation, but there was a gentleman by the name of Forrest. I don't know his last name right now, but I can access and find it. He's been out there for years, and he's been on the streets, and I've cried with him, hugged with him, and shared with him many, many times. He has a son that he wants to get back, and he has a psychosis that needs to be dealt with. He's one of the ones that I feel are the worst atrocities because he's been banned from a lot. Now he can't even get his meds.
Now, why was he banned?
He was banned. Their allegations are that he's been dealing drugs on the lot. Whether there's a truth or non-truth to that, I'm uncertain of. But hungry people steal. Hungry people sell drugs because they have no other means when they've been... The atrocities that have been brought down upon them, they don't have any other choice but to do what needs to, maybe he had, but...
Even people who are well-fed in houses sell drugs.
Absolutely.
In fact, pharmacies sell drugs. And, you know, liquor stores also sell very potent drugs.
Yes, I do agree with that, and that is very much a true statement. Well, I was there Saturday, and I saw that he was being banned from the lot. He says, Mark, I'm getting ready to get banned from the lot. Watch. And because he's been banned from the lot, and he was just trying to use the restroom, and one of the security personnel That's quote unquote, because I believe if we were an entire community, we wouldn't have to pay security people because we could police our own selves there. And that's one of the issues that I choose to bring up is as a community. There's a lot of things that could be done there. And I do understand that the staff there is brought up in the meeting, the town forum, was the fact that their $1.3 billion budget for the family shelter law.
$1.3 million,
I'm sorry. Has been reduced by 25% because the feds cut out their funding. So I understand that they're spread thin, and I have made many, many, many recommendations. One of those recommendations being the computer lab that we have no access to because they have to use college volunteers. What they've claimed and said to me is that the fact that the computers are not running well, and I says, well, I can clean them up. You don't need to pay somebody to fix them. I can fix them. I know how to do that stuff. There's many, many people on that lot that can do so. But back to Forrest, which really bothers me, is he was banned from the lot, and my statement, as he was being banned from the lot, and he actually has it on videotape because he was carrying his video phone with him and recording it all as he was being kicked off the lot. Very brilliant young man, but he has a psychosis. Anyways, he was being banned from the lot, and I was attempting to help him in case he didn't know, but I know a very good civil rights attorney in this town, and I was referring to that civil rights attorney in this town, a name I won't bring up on the air at this point.
Feel free to do so if you wish.
Terry Hill, is that right?
I don't know Terry, but I'm always pleased to hear new people that I've never heard of.
So I may have that incorrect, and I don't want to, that's why I didn't bring it up, because...
Yeah. So it might be Terry Hill, might not.
Right. So I have the name. I just have been I've been networking a lot, so a lot of names in my head, they don't all fit in there at some time.
There was Forrest videotaping as he was being hustled off the lot. There was you trying to what were you trying to do to try to help him?
I was trying to give him some pointers on who he could find a civil rights attorney because I believe his civil rights are being offended. And so I was immediately from the security person, Joe, told that I was now banned from the lot. And I said, I'm banned for the lot for free speech? Oh, yes, right? So I says, well, look, I'm just going to sit here. You're going to have to call the police on this one because I'm going to wait for them to show up. And yeah, you guys are spending government money on... You wouldn't treat your children like this, I keep repeating to them. So then Santa Cruz Bible Church showed up, and they serve on Saturdays, and I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But I was having a discussion, and it was a righteous anger because I was being banned from trying to help someone again. And so the way that I felt about it was, you know, I was quite upset, and I wasn't using any foul language. I have a number of witnesses that I have recorded on my digitized
which you carry with you.
Which I carry with me continually. I don't always use it, but I did document it and remembered the individual that witnessed what it is I'm speaking of. Well, he confronted me and told me that I was being too loud and I was disruptive and everything else. Well, then Joe, the security gentleman that day, while I'd already been banned, and I told him to go ahead and call the police, he said that I was inhibiting their ability to serve food there.
And did anyone else agree with that?
Not one person agreed with that. So anyways, I appropriately left the lot and let things iron out as they were.
Have you been back there since?
Yes, I was back there this morning. I think I told Joe because shortly afterwards, as they were serving lunch, there was two to three other people that have been banned from the lot. Their civil rights of being able to eat and use a public restroom have been violated because they've been banned from the lot for whatever reasons it might be. I saw a gentleman, he was leaving. This gentleman, Joe, I told him, if you don't stop, Joe, you wouldn't treat your children like this, Joe. If you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to lose your job or you're going to get hurt. I recommend that you stay on the lot because there's a number of people that have threatened his life that if they see him off the lot, that he's going to. And I was trying to help Joe by stating, you need to treat him with kindness, okay? And you're not doing that.
And what was Joe's response?
Of course, he didn't handle truth very well, like quite a few people. quite a few people I've run into in the world, they tend to get, they let their pride and ego get in the way. And I told him that's what he was doing. He was being prideful and arrogant in his position and role, and he was power tripping, and that he should have his wife, who's pregnant and living in the loft with him, talk to him about how he should treat others.
Now, you were there this morning. Did Joe again try to get you to leave the lot?
I didn't see Joe. I didn't get the. I left this morning because I was told that I was banned from the lot, and Nancy Lou doesn't get there till 9. So I was. Anyways, I went hungry this morning. So, and I found out that Daniel, who is the services, I was banned from the lot for a period of weeks because of the gardening that I was doing, and another atrocity from another gentleman by the name of John who blasphemed me, and I had 10 days to get my stuff off the lot. It was Friday the 13th, Friday the 13th, when I had, well, that was my 10th day to get all my stuff out of the lot, and I got my stuff out, and I had to come back to get my bicycle because somebody had given me a ride. It took me 45 days to get all my stuff there from the various locations. I had it all around town, ditched here and ditched there. That's what us homeless people do. We don't have storage because they shut down the storage facility there.
So there's no lockers there at the moment?
No lockers now, and that was brought up in the town hall meeting. The lockers were brought up in the town hall meeting, the fact that they couldn't afford to pay for them, that they were going to get new lockers and that they were going to put them outside. And we found out that they're now going to charge us for those lockers, which we believe should be free. And I asked, well, if you're going to get these lockers, and we've already given you recommendations on how and where to get these lockers for free, why are we going to be charged? And the bottom line is it comes down to that they want to stuff their pockets.
Now, are the bathrooms open at night at the homeless service center?
Yes, the bathrooms are open at night. They're open.
Anyone or just for people who are not banned?
For anyone who are not banned.
So if you want to take a dump, you should do so on the ground outside the homeless service center?
And that has been done. There's another gal, and I don't recall her name, but she's quite popular. I've been down here for 14 months, and I know almost everybody by face, but not everybody by name. It was possibly 6 months ago. She's been banned from the lot, and she's also a 5150, which means she's got mental incapacity, and the system has failed her greatly. And she had been banned from the lot, and all she wanted to do, she's very incontinent, which means that she goes in her pants often, and amongst other things. Well, they banned her from the lot, and they wouldn't let her in to use the restroom, so she actually pulled down her britches and did it right in front of the door of the restroom area in the lot, on the hygiene bay.
And there you have it. She gave a shit, in other words.
That's exactly what she did.
Indeed. So you mentioned a meeting maybe coming up next for homeless people who may be listening to this station, though probably can't afford a radio or a computer, but so probably aren't. But when is that next meeting at the Homeless Service Center happening?
That'll be June 25th. I believe it'll be at 10 a.m. The last time it was held at 10 a.m. also. The meeting?
Where?
At the in the cafeteria at the Paul Lee Loft.
And is the public invited as well?
I do believe everyone is invited.
Okay. And you're going to be there?
I intend to be there for sure.
And you think that will banned people be allowed to attend?
I'm not sure if that's going to be a possibility or not, but if I bring the right people, I don't think that they'll have any other choice.
So you will be there banned though you may be?
Oh, I will be there banned though I may be, and if I have to, I'll be bringing a civil rights attorney with me.
And this time we will know what his name is, clearly.
Clearly. And I've already spoken with Santa Cruz Sentinel and KSBW8. I've got them perched and waiting also so that we can do a little bit of an expose. I'm going to give them time, what I call third time's a charm. I'm going to give them a second meeting to see how this transpires. The Homeless Service Center, to see how Monica Martinez and some of the other powers that be actually handle what we as the homeless would like to have done. I actually have the minutes recorded of that meeting and also written documentation. And the meeting went fairly well. There was a number of topics that were very well discussed, but I have yet to see any of those topics that we discussed fixed. That,
by the way, we just saw Officer Winston just drove by in his squad car. Have you heard any reports on him, positive or negative, from any homeless folks?
Officer Winston, I don't know him by name, but I do know him by face, and I've seen him harassing many, many, many people. I do know two friends that are on the street. They're a married couple, very beautiful married couple, and I told them to document their stuff. Whoever it was, they had 7 full garbage bags of aluminum cans, and they were on their way to the Costco aluminum exchange so they could make some money. And they were both written tickets for scavenging, and he never even saw them scavenging at all. And I says, well, when's your court date or whatever? He says, no, you don't have a court date. What they're going to do is they're going to mail it to you. And I says, well, what happens if you're banned from the lot? I says, then you don't get your mail? And I says, wow. So many, many, many atrocities going on there that I feel are completely wrong. And
happening with the waiting list and the people who are getting sleeping or camping tickets? In the old days, a year ago, it was apparently the practice to sign off people who came in and said, you know, here's my ticket, and the shelter was full on that day. We'll write you a letter for the court. Is that still being done? Now I hear they have a new procedure that says they won't do that, but if you are on a waiting list, they'll somehow that information will get to the city attorney's office, and that'll be written off by the city attorney. Have you heard any reports around people getting camping tickets and what the homeless service center has been doing around that?
No, I haven't specifically heard anything about that. I did hear about the camping ticket squashings from the lot. I believe it was Daniel,
Yeah, I believe you're right.
I believe it was Daniel that was supposed to be squashing those tickets. At one point, there was a notice somewhere there that said if you had one of those, you could do so. Apparently, from what I've heard, I don't know the entire truth to this matter, but there is about 60 to 70 people on the waiting list to get into the loft. And I talked with someone that is in the loft 2 days ago that said that there's 12 empty beds in a loft that only holds 30 men and 30 women. And that was 30 available beds in the men's dorm alone. But there's 70 people waiting on the list.
I think it's 48 max or 46 max and split between men and women, but that still sounds interesting. We've been talking with
Mark Beckner.
And Mark, do you have, if people want to get in touch with you, is there a way they can reach you?
Currently, I have no phone. To contact me, you can contact me at Cuttingwood, CUTTINGWOOD.
So I'm getting a report here at the parish hall.
I don't, apparently that his email address got cut off. Sorry about that. He actually, Mark did attend the last Huff meeting yesterday, so maybe we can get a contact for him in the future. It sounds like he's got quite a lot of his fingers in a lot of pies, keeping an eye on a lot of stuff. He's a little frantic, you know, in his delivery, a little rapid fire. But, you know, I think a lot of what he says is very interesting and sounds like it's based in reality.
Ray Churchill.
Yeah, I think we're working.
That over at the homeless service center, at least one individual reports being told to leave. What was the cause again for having earphones?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking that's what it was that I had earphones, and apparently he came up to me the first time and said that.
This is Joe, the security guard.
Yeah, I was causing problems on the lot, so when I had asked him that, he got defensive and said that he could fucking do whatever he wants, and I quote him. Okay, and then I pulled out my phone and then was recording him and asked him, could you give me a specific reason? Because I was going to go down to legal aid and do some harassment things with them, because they are like...
So you're not being harassed?
Yeah, I'm just saying that what's going on is that many people are losing their rights to shower, to eat, to just take care of themselves as humans. It's kind of becoming like a situation where the people think they're gods and they're abusing authorities.
The staff, you mean?
Right. They think they're gods. I've had the main lady there tell me that she was a god and that I wasn't going to eat there for 7 days.
Which main lady?
Nancy Lou, to be honest with you. And she had told me that I was out for 7 days. So I went back after 7 days. I got 1 day in, I washed my clothes, and then the next day they started attacking on me again. Because I'm a very outspoken person. I'm not going to, like, sit there and take that crap. It's they're being really harassing. They're being inhumane. I have mental conditions where I need some services there. I get my SSI. I need some services. I don't get that much, but what I do need, I need to save to get off of where I'm at, you know? And it just seems like there's a lot of people that want...
How long have you used the homeless service center?
How long have I used it for?
Yeah.
I'm still currently not as much as I use it, but I have been using it for at least 6 years because I had a place at one time.
Was there a change at some point in the
About 5 years ago it changed. The main change came when the new staff came in with Nancy Lou and Joe and all them. They're like they're really pushing the limits on their power and what they can do. What it is we need to hire staff that isn't or used to be homeless, that has social skills and doesn't want to run the phone bill up to call the man. You know, that's what's going on over there. The first thing is they just call. They're not paying attention to people's needs. Like, what if somebody had a bad day and they walk in there? Because that person had a bad day and they walked in there, he might not be reflecting it on anybody in particular. He just might be having it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of walking up to him as a general person of humanity, he bam, right on the phone to the man. He doesn't, and then they're out of there. So that's actually creating more of a problem than what really is needed.
Now, are you or anyone else documenting the number of exclusions that have happened?
Today, I know of at least 7 people that are out for 7 days or 30 days.
And a period of, during what period of time?
The last 2 weeks.
And
they're slamming people and throwing them out.
Do you wish to identify yourself for our authorities here?
I would purposely not do that right now until we get a little more grasped with more people.
Okay.
And then I'll be, you know, I'm just as lucky enough to be outspoken as it is. And we're hoping that Paulie Loft is here so we can address him because he did want to know about these situations.
So Paulie, the fellow who's the Paulie Loft is named after, came to the Homeless Service Center because he was going to take some concerns, but apparently that didn't work too well, or what?
They served dinner at the same time that he was supposed to have been speaking, so that people can do that, and they did that on a level so that their shortcomings of whatever they're doing are not going to be heard by him. So at the same time, people were eating, and what would they try to do? They'd rather eat and not be able to talk to him. So what a way to keep their opinions away from him.
Well, what, you know, he is, I think he's actually maybe in the... doing the Penn University now. You might want to speak to him.
Yeah, I heard that he might come in here. We got
And that's something people probably are aware of or listen to this show regularly. You're listening to an interview about a week or two ago by a person who doesn't want to be identified about problems in the Paulie Loft. Earlier you heard Mark Beckner talking about these problems or as he sees them. I think he organizes and invites speakers to the Penn University, which happens every Monday, 5 o'clock at the Red Church, during the same time, Father Joel Miller and Rene Curry throw a. They're I think different speakers every week doing a kind of a inspirational service based on Christian biblical study, and then there's a meal, and also Father Joel Miller has been very. Very open and accessible in terms of encouraging people to talk about their civil rights and violations of civil rights. He's given me an opportunity to make announcements and invite people to come talk about issues. Steve Plaich, who has been doing legal work for homeless people who want help, he can't do legal work in terms of, he doesn't bill himself as an attorney, which he's not, but he has had a lot of legal training, and he does try to be of assistance. He can draw up legal documents. He can also provide due legal research, and he's there, again, between 5 and 7 usually at the Red Church. He's also a regular with suicide prevention and needle exchange. In fact, I'm going to pause here briefly to give him a call to see if he has any updates, which he might share with us. Giving him a quick buzz here. The But Steve does put his number.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, just kind of doing a quick update to see if you have anything you want to pass on. I know there were a number of meetings last night, some of which you may have either gotten to or heard about.
Yeah, I was at the ESCOM forum at Loudoun Nelson, which was terrific, in fact.
Explain what that is, could you?
Secure Communications is a program that actually was initiated by DHS and is administrated really by the Department of Justice here in the state of California. And what it does is it allows ICE, which as you know is the Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to gather information on people who are booked into and through our county jail system. Initially, it was intended to kind of gather up level three felons, but what it's done is inadvertently gather up level one misdemeanants and fraction folks and level two people who have lesser serious crimes, and the sheriff will then detain them for deportation, or what's really referred to now as exclusion.
Do we have any stats, Steve, do we have any stats on how many people in Santa Cruz County have actually been detained for minor crimes and then deported?
In fact, we had some stats from last night. In the month of April, which is the last reporting period we had, there were 42. And what they've been able to determine is that 71% of those were people who were characterized by the Department of Statistics in Washington as non-criminal. So what they're doing is in the main, they are detaining people who are really not criminals. Once you're into the jail system, as you know, you're fingerprinted, and then automatically you're identified. And that information, it's actually an information-sharing system with ICE and the Sheriff's Department.
Sort of a snitch system?
Well, what it does is it gets around racial profiling, basically. And as you know, which is unconstitutional, but this is just one way to racially profile Latinos. And as soon as they get into the jail system, then that information is shared with ICE. And
away they go.
And away they go, absolutely. So that was interesting.
This is the ACLU expressing concerns about it, which is you know, I should say an improvement, because the local ACLU, whose board you've just joined, mm-hmm. hasn't been too, I've been extremely critical of their failure to take action on issues that concern poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz.
And we're becoming much more engaged now. I'll be going to the Board of Supervisors budget meeting, which will be held at the Watsonville City Council Chambers on Monday evening, to address them on the budgetary considerations. If we can get them to withhold monies from the Sheriff's Department in return for some kind of a modified program, we might be able to get some traction on at least getting the Sheriff to cooperate and not sharing information with ICE in terms of Latinos booked into the county jail. So we're going to go discuss that with the Board of Supervisors on Monday night. I'm going to be going, Jen, who you know also on the Board of Directors, or ACLU will be there. So we're trying to get more of a presence and more engagement on local issues and how they impact people here in town and in the county.
For those who are interested in making their way all the way to Watsonville, when and where that's happening?
7:30 on Monday night in the Watsonville City Council Chambers, but it's actually a budget session for the Board of Supervisors. So they're reviewing their budget, their fiscal year 2011-2012 budget. So if we can urge the Board of Supervisors, who actually did pass a resolution, and you and I certainly are not wild about their resolutions and their effectiveness, but nevertheless they did pass a resolution in support of AB 1081, which is an opt-in, opt-out law for secure communications for local jurisdictions. And they passed that unanimously. So we think we can get some traction with the Board of Supervisors in terms of perhaps having them restrict certain funds, administrative funds, for the sheriff, make it more difficult for him to actually administer a program that shares information with ICE.
Now, how do you explain, because you were also at the city council meeting, where the city council voted 4-3 not to support that opt-in, opt-out AB 1081 resolution that would have, to some extent, put some brakes or allowed for possible brakes on the what I call the ICE snitch program.
How do
you account for the city council's saying no, but the Board of Supervisors unanimously saying yes?
I think that speaks more to the political composition of our city council. I think that generally speaking, on issues of this kind, the Board of Supervisors is much more liberal. I think Mark Stone, particularly, who's taken the lead on that, John Leopold, and not so much Neil Coonerty, who I don't know as well in those terms, but Greg Caput, who is the new supervisor from Watsonville. So as you know, that's three out of the five, and I think that they were able to persuade Ellen Peary and Neil Coonerty to go along with them. But that's just the political reality of Santa Cruz, is that there are four council members who simply, I don't think, are in tune with what we believe to be a potentially very dangerous program that's being administered by the County Sheriff's Department. Their reaction was that they didn't have any way to control it because they don't have any control over the jail system, even though it's in Santa Cruz City, and that's true. But as a gesture, I think perhaps that they could have gone beyond what they think is practical reality and said something about protecting their citizens.
Now, Ryan Coonerty, as you know, 2 years ago at the board of the ACLU Board of Directors, or maybe it was 3 years ago, got the so-called Hammer of Justice Award. And I think you mentioned to me that you noted when you went to one of the board meetings where you
I was actually looking over that, and it wasn't the Hammer of Justice. It was something else, and I had made a note. It was some kind of it's not a medal, something of freedom, I think, was actually the award.
Well, he also got a Hammer of Justice Award, but maybe we're talking about something else.
Anyway, there was some certainly disappointment on the board with how the city council had reacted to this resolution, but there was some question about whether or not it was hastily put together. I think Tony Madrigal really wanted to have this resolution adopted, and the ACLU at that time had not taken a position on it. I spoke in favor of it personally, individually, at city council, and then there was a modified version. Tony's resolution was never voted on. A modified resolution put forth by Don Lane was voted on, law 4-3. And there is some talk now that maybe we can have, and you and I have discussed this, it may be able to be brought back to the council if one of the members who voted no would want to reconsider their position, and there is some discussion about that.
I guess my thought is also that, I mean, some of us found it outrageous that Coonerty got this Civil Liberties Award from the ACLU at a time he's been championing anti-homeless laws downtown. Then you told me the curious, observation that apparently was former Mayor Mike Rotkin who was raising doubts about Ryan Coonerty at the board meeting of the ACLU?
Yeah, well, he is certainly maybe trying to get back to local engagement on progressive issues. I can't speak for Mike, really. But he seems that he is done with city politics, and maybe he wants to take his place as kind of a village elder, and maybe he'll drift back to what was at one time a strong political strong progressive stance that he has taken. So we'll just have to see.
In response to Bob LaMonica's concern about the ACLU's ducking issue after issue locally, I presented them with 10 pressing current local issues in a letter, and I received no response either from the board. In fact, I received a rejection from the board e-list that they would not put it on their list because I wasn't an ACLU member. So maybe since you're on the board, I would encourage you to put it on as at least an informational item for members of the ACLU.
I've indicated today, I'm going to miss my first board meeting I attended last month, and of course we'll have one this coming month. I indicated to them that there are a couple of items that I wanted to agendize, and I think that maybe one or two of those things might find their way to the agenda. We'll just have to see.
No, but I'm just talking about the fact that I raised they invited us to a meeting, we gave our thoughts at the meeting, and then they asked for more specifics about a local issue, and they're blocking their own membership from even reviewing the letter. I would encourage you to let their membership see the letter, not, frankly, that I have any great hopes that the ACLU board or membership will do anything. If they can't even defend the rights of their own canvassers in the Trader Joe's parking lot, where they have been arrested and cited for circulating, essentially information about the ACLU, you can't expect them to help anybody else, for sure. But
I think we've discussed this, and I really don't have time to revisit that point, although I do agree with you on that.
Right,
but
now
let me move on to...
Sure, what else you got? What else you got?
We have a meeting this morning with the Homeless Services Center, and they're very enthusiastic about not only am I providing my Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project up there, over there, but also maybe addressing the full group of Page Smith and doing something with them. So I was very encouraged by what they're proposing for my involvement up there. And it may be even a little more comprehensive than I thought. So it was a great meeting, and I'm looking forward to getting settled in up there and providing them some legal services.
And you have actually a time that's going to happen?
They're going to work out the logistics of it. We're trying to figure out whether or not we just want to have a sign-up list over there, and then people can kind of make appointments, and I can do it that way. I told them that I had business cards, which I distributed over there, and some of the other materials that I had, that people could certainly call me anytime they want. We're trying to set up, you know, something that's a bit more organized so that the participants over there will know that I'm offering this service. They can sign up for it or call me directly. But they're also talking about my doing some work with the people in the Rebel Lake Family Shelter, Paige Smith's house itself, River Street Shelter, on an individual basis in terms of presentations and some things that I can advise them on. So I was really really encouraged by their reception, and they're certainly interested in having me participate, even on a larger scale than I had originally thought.
Now, are you still putting out your phone number to those who want it, if they want to get in touch with you? To
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that is, as I understand it, 334-8692?
Absolutely, that's my number, my cell number. I always have it with me. In fact, we're speaking on that very cell phone number right now.
Indeed, indeed.
And which from time to time I receive generous and anonymous contributions towards. So there's always that to look forward to.
It's a little slush fund for your campaign.
Yeah, people can call me anytime, and I'm always available to talk, and that's not only the homeless person's legal assistance number, it's my number.
You
so
also mentioned
there is no time when I'm not available.
That's really great, Steve. And again, the number for those who are interested is 334-8692. 334-8692 for Steve Plaich, rhymes with H, an activist who's concerned, who has a lot of legal background, seems to do at least 10 things at the same time and talks 10 times as fast as most of us. Steve, you last night there were meetings other than the ACLU board, which did they take a position on either the city council's refusal to endorse the AB 1081 that would give immigrants a fighting chance, maybe some of them, to avoid getting dumped into the a deportation machine for sitting on the sidewalk.
The other meetings that I wasn't able to attend, which I had to kind of farm out because I haven't yet figured out a way to clone myself, is there was a DCEL task force meeting, and I received some news from that there were like about 12 of our members that went, so they were shocked that there were as many people in attendance as to a DCEL task force meeting. So we're happy about that. And there was also a Santa Cruz Neighbors meeting at the Police Community Center, Police Community Room, and I really don't know what they were talking about, although when I read the description of the event online, it just sounded like it was kind of a get-together and whatnot. So I don't think that they're really discussing FCOM. The only people who were really discussing it seriously last night, and also the people who were there, SCORE was a very visible presence there last night along with the ACLU. SCORE, as you know, is the Santa Cruz Coalition to Overcome Racism. And they're very active in that. There's also an immigration law action group that was there. If you know Doug Keegan is the immigration law attorney who works with all the folks down in Watsonville for the Immigration Law Center. Great guy. He was there. So there was quite a bit of real talk and potential action that came out of last night's meeting. So we're all pretty happy about that. But the rest of what was going on, of course, you know I'm on the coordinating committee for 20 Madrigals, the Del Nopal Festival, so I couldn't make that one either, but I did send in a report to them.
On the coordinating committee for what? I'm sorry?
It's the Festival Del Nopal. It's a Latino festival, kind of a dance, folklorico, music, food. They'll have that July 24th downtown, right next to the library. So you'll be hearing more about that. Those are things that were going on, but really not, in terms of serious political activity where people are trying to make a difference in the community on a civil liberties plane, I think the FCOM meeting is probably most important.
Well, Steve, thank you for giving us the update, and I guess you will next be available publicly. Of course, you're here, there, and everywhere, but you're also available at the Red Church on Mondays around 5 down there at Lincoln.
Yeah,
and
I am still going to continue over there, and I'll also be tomorrow night. Of course, we'll be doing our vigil at the corner of Pacific and
Cooper.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We always do that with women in black.
What about your lone Saturday anti-war vigil?
Yeah, I did not do the lone Saturday vigil last Saturday because I was involved in other things, but I will be back to it this Saturday, so there's always that. And we're starting, actually, interestingly enough, talking to some folks around town. We might start talking about another rally for the Santa Cruz Coalition to Free Julian Assange and Bradley Manning, which you were co-founder. And maybe get something going in that area as well, because I've just had some people talking about it, and with our good friend Will Koikel, and we'll see what's going on.
You know, I think we'll try to wind down from your speedy delivery there.
Okay.
And thank you for, you know, for giving us far too much information, but I think all of it pretty useful if we could ever process it.
Yeah, well, I'm certain that your audience has the ability and the intellect and the concern and care. I think people listen to free radio are really concerned about political issues and civil liberties and civil rights and human rights, and so we appreciate the fact that that they are listening in and they're doing what they can, and I'm always happy to talk to them. And you.
And a special tip of the hat to you for your work recently on responding to the city attorney's latest boondoggle, the attempt to essentially maintain the current policy of if you sing a song on the sidewalk and it wakes up a day sleeper, the city will bring its full resources to bear to make you pay a fine of $450. And I'm glad you're trying to raise that issue with I think it's a futile quest in a way, but it certainly is a principled one, and I thank you for it.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and I find it a matter of interest to me, so it'll continue to be. But we'll do what we can. Fight in the good fight, Robert.
Hey, thanks, man.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. And phone lines are really open, as they have been for the last hour and a half. You can call Free Radio, which is what I'm talking to you on, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org if you're listening on the computer. And this is Bathrobes, Pierre's, Broadsides. My name's Robert, and you can call me at 427-3772, 427-3772. A quick update on Ed Fry and Gary Johnson, two political prisoners who are being held in the Santa Cruz County Jail on a six-month sentence for the crime of what they call lodging. That's State Penal Code 647E, which is discussed a bit online at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, in case you want to read some of the discussion. There's a discussion going on between activist Becky Johnson, who actually attended the Friday hearing where Ed Fry and Gary Johnson were sentenced to 6 months, and some supporters of that sentence, or people at least who have questions critical of those who are outraged by the sentence. And I guess, you know, I will probably weigh in at that website at some point. The issue really has to do with the selective use of a penal code to stop a political protest. And the notion that public property can, without a general set of hearings, be closed to the public at night, selectively closed to the public at night, where some people will be allowed to remain and others will be told to leave if they happen to be sleeping there. The notion that sleeping is lodging is simply, it certainly can be construed as part of lodging if you're looking at, you know, one of the dictionary definitions. But the notion that that is an illegal activity on public property without the permission of the owner of the property or the city officials and the county officials who supposedly manage the property, it, of course, short-circuits the whole idea that it's the community that has rights on that property regardless of the bureaucratic designs, directions, and dictates of those who are trying to run off political protesters because they don't like what they're doing there. And for those who are concerned that there might be a messy campsite there or that people are engaging in illegal behavior, my response is quite simple. You punish people or you arrest people or you take people to court for the illegal behavior, not for the legal First Amendment activity that they're engaged in. And I'm particularly incensed about this when the First Amendment activity is in aid of trying to stop the criminalization of poor and homeless people who must, as we all must, sleep at night, because that's simply a legal requirement. If sleeping at night per se becomes the only criterion for lodging, then anyone anywhere in the state, under Judge Gallagher's ruling, a definition of lodging to the jury, can be the basis for a conviction, and you'll face a sentence initially of 400 hours of community service, if that's what Judge Geller decides he wants to give you, and 3 years probation, an interesting kind of sentence, because if you're homeless, probation generally means you obey all laws, and if one of those laws is the lodging law, then you're not allowed to sleep anywhere on any public property. And you better make sure that you can either break into somebody's house there, find some friend who will put you up even though that person may be suffering great economic difficulties, as many people are this time, or just you'll have to accept the so-called claim, which I think is completely bogus, that public property is not really public property, but really is the property of a small clique of bureaucrats who can decide when and where people will be allowed to use the public property. There's such a thing as reasonable regulation, and then there's such a thing as selective enforcement to eliminate political protesters. And I think it's quite clear to those who really look over the situation that that is what happened with Peace Camp 2010, and that is what happened with Ed Fry and Gary Johnson last Friday and throughout the course of this whole pseudo-judicial process. I say pseudo-judicial because it all seems pretty unconstitutional to me and an incredible waste of time and money. And people will say, well, yeah, but the jury, 12 jurors, good and true, made a decision. And I say, well, that's because jurors tend to be deferential to the definitions that the judges give them, even though they should be aware but aren't, that the Constitution gives a deeper definition of the rights of citizens. And sometimes this can happen where a jury will insist on not guilty, even though a law is clearly violated because they find the law unjust, or they find the prosecution inappropriate, or they find the general circumstances to be unfair, which is the right and the power of the jury, called jury nullification or jury independence or jury supremacy. But usually the people are pretty closely regimented and controlled, and more worse than that, accept that kind of regimentation and control. I mean, I blanch every time I go through the security nonsense at the county courthouse. I imagine people who go on airplanes face even worse conditions, and the incredible arrogance of people in positions of power who have suddenly acquired a huge amount of power over ordinary human beings in ways that they shouldn't, and ways that the Constitution, I think, bars them from doing it, or if it doesn't, it should, but I think it actually does if it were actually viewed in its true light. But I'm not really a constitutional fetishist. I don't believe the Constitution covers everything that should be covered, but I believe that there are certain human rights that are independent of and basic, even more basic than constitutional rights. But I think the Constitution is pretty clear, and even the California Constitution, it makes it clear that people cannot be criminalized for sleeping at night when they have no other options. And that is exactly what John Gallagher and the courts did. And the worst part of it is that the district attorney knew that's what they were doing. They spent money to do it anyway with an overweening political objective to crush a political protest, and I suspect to deter subsequent political protests. Let's hear some more interviews from the street. I believe we're in the midst of one, and that was this one here.
Few people here that really like to talk to them about what's going on down there. They're calling it the Kevorkian of homeless people that staff there.
And that is an anonymous critic of the Homeless Service Center kind of winding up his concerns about the Homeless Service Center's... Well, what was he specifically saying? He was saying that Paul Lee, who went to the Homeless Service Center to gather complaints, didn't really get a forum because it was scheduled at a time where people... you know, had to eat at the same time and couldn't really talk and eat and get involved with him, there are people being kicked out of the Homeless Service Center, expelled for inappropriate reasons and in sort of increasing numbers, and that it's partially a function of abuse by staff members Joe and Nancy Lou and others who I haven't spoken to. These may be completely false accusations against these folks, but these are the voices from the street that I am hearing and that you are hearing, and you've got to make up your own mind as to what is really happening. And hopefully this kind of raw data will give you at least a piece of the picture.
But Kevorkian is dead. He died some
days
ago.
Well, using that expression.
Indeed, I understand.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. You know, what if somebody was to need medicine and have to eat, and maybe they didn't have an extra money in their pocket, like a check or something, and they were to expire or something because they weren't able to have anything else?
Well,
We understand there are other necessity
it
needs.
It reduces
here.
The
yeah.
surplus almost population. Don't you understand?
Yes, we do know that.
It's a good guess. It's for
we're
the other people.
That we can grab a hold of them, Robert, and work with you in a more positive way to get understanding to get this thing straightened out.
I hope so. I understand there's a meeting coming up, a community meeting, or for the.
I don't know, but we need to start making like huge fluorescent copies of where meetings are for people that are homeless and want to speak their mind in a presentable way. And just start posting them all over the place.
And make sure you call in to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'll give you a couple cards here.
A brief pause on the tape here, but soon.
So we're talking
here we
outside
go.
Of the Sub Rosa. It's Wednesday, the 8th of June, and I'm talking with Justin Howie. It's around noon, and Justin, you contacted me this morning because you had a bad experience with a police officer?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I was walking to go to sleep. You know, I was just walking home, and this officer just came, drove up to me, and without saying anything else, he told me to turn around, and he put the cuffs on me, and I asked him why, and he wouldn't tell me, and it wasn't until I got in the car that he told me that it was for public intoxication.
You had a couple beers?
I had a couple shots of some fine liquors, and it wasn't, you know, enough to, you know, make, I told him that if you want to tell me I'm intoxicated, then you should breathalyze me or give me some kind of test to prove it, because I told him I wasn't, and he refused.
And you were then taken to jail?
Yes, I was taken there, and I was left there for 6 hours.
And how was the jail situation?
It was they wouldn't tell me that anything about the charges. I was, you know, it was uncomfortable. I couldn't sleep. And I was tired when I was walking home, and that's why I sat down. So
are you houseless yourself?
Yes.
And were you staggering? Were you unable to take care of yourself?
No, I was standing perfectly straight.
And where was this?
It was off of, down off of Ocean Street, not too far. I'd have
about
to,
10 o'clock in the in night, or when did you say it was?
About 10 o'clock at night.
And has this happened to you before in Santa Cruz?
No.
How long have you been houseless?
For about 2 months.
And how did that happen, if I may be so bold as to?
Well, I had a girlfriend that basically, you know, she left.
Kicked you out of your house.
No, well,
she seized your house.
She had my debit cards and everything, and
she seized all the rest of your money.
Yeah, she basically used up everything I had, and she took off in her car, and she has my skates and everything.
So you couldn't afford to pay rent for your house. So you were. This was in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, no, I was actually transitioning between jobs, and I was staying out of a hotel.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm an electrician. I've been an electrician for about 5 years.
Here in Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Elsewhere.
And what brought you to Santa Cruz?
It was a place I've been about 5 years ago, and I knew it was a good spot to, you know, be able to, you know.
Be homeless comfortably? A magnet effect? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it was a very comfortable and spiritually and definitely, you know.
You have friends here?
Yeah, I used to have friends here, but they no longer live here.
So you came here, did you come here for the social services? Did you come here because of the climate? Did you come here because of the spiritual nexus of Rutu?
It was much more comfortable than a big city, you know, trying to get by in San Jose and, you know.
That's where you were before?
Yes. Yeah.
And getting back to this incident of the arrest for drunk in public, you claim not to have been drunk.
Yes.
And have you ever been arrested for being drunk in public?
No, never.
Have you ever been drunk in public?
Yes.
And how frequently does that happen?
Anymore, I don't really drink. It's actually the first time I've drank in about a year.
What drove you to drink? Tell us the truth.
Honestly, I just felt like just having a few drinks with some people downtown.
Couldn't afford marijuana, eh?
No, not at the time.
I see.
So you were released after what, a number of hours? Were you able to secure your property?
Yes.
But you mentioned in the past your property has disappeared?
Yes.
And under what circumstances?
Well, a park ranger had found my things, and he took everything but what he needed, and he left the sleeping bag because he didn't need it, and he took all my health food and different things that I've purchased with my EBT card.
You're in the Santa Cruz area?
Yes.
How long ago?
That was about a month ago, actually.
Do we know? How do you know it was a park ranger?
He told me that that's what he does, and that was he'd come by there again, and I had discussed it with him.
Did you talk to him after he'd done it or before?
It was after. It was probably a couple weeks after he had done it.
It wasn't Chief Ranger Wallace, was it? Remember his name?
I don't remember.
Was he a feisty, beefy guy? Or
he was a very kind guy, actually. He was very nice.
What did he look like?
He was just a regular build, he was younger, probably in his 30s.
He admitted to stealing your property?
Well, he admitted to taking other people's property. He says in that general area, anything he finds, he takes and he throws out, and he claims he throws it out.
Interesting. This happens again. I encourage also people listening to document this in the sense that get the name of the person who's doing it, because this violates both state law and the Constitution, and has been the subject of at least two successful lawsuits, Lair versus Sacramento in Sacramento and Kincaid versus City of Fresno. We've been talking with
Justin Howie.
Anything you want to add, Justin?
No, that pretty much covers it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So I want to say, mention before we go, that you're a person who also has a certain disability.
Yes.
The disability gives you the pain that one would get from fibromyalgia, but also it has to do with you're unable to eat sugar and gluten?
Yes.
And so as a homeless person, this must make it more difficult for you to use food services.
It is. Yes. But they're
losing weight even.
Well, I've still maintained my weight pretty well, and it's just at times I have to eat a little more sugar and a little more gluten because that's all that is available sometimes, and it's more painful to try to sleep. Especially sleep, but during the day it even gives me problems with trying to walk around. And I do walk quite a bit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm here on, as dusk is falling near the Regal Cinemas on the levee path, which actually it's illegal to be on the levee after dark. It's some bullshit they have. I'm not sure if it's this side of the levee or the other side of the levee. I'm talking with a guy who just got a citation from Officer Winston, who parked his squad car blocking a lane of traffic to give you a ticket for...
I was drinking wine on the levee.
And were you wild and crazy drunk?
No, I wasn't. I was very discreet. I was trying to keep the bottle hidden. He just snuck up from behind and saw me take a pull, so...
So he, and what was his purpose? And because when I came up, I saw his car blocking a lane of traffic here across from the parking garage next to the River Street Cinema. By the way, the date, in case people are wondering, is June 8th, 2011. What's your first name?
John.
And John, you're outside, living outside?
I am. I'm traveling, and I happen to be in Santa Cruz at the moment, and I'm shelterly challenged, I suppose. At the same time, I need a drink that helps me to sleep at night because I stay a little warmer. So I got a bottle of wine, and I have nowhere to really discreetly drink the bottle of wine. If I go into the levee, I'm against the law. It seems like anywhere I go, it's against the law.
Parking garage is against the law. It's not just against the law to drink wine in a parking garage. It's against the law to be in a parking garage unless you're parking or retrieving a vehicle or walking through.
Right.
And it's illegal to be on the levee if it's after dark. So there seems to be a whole complex of laws designed to make it very inhospitable for you.
Well, that is the idea. And I understand that, there can be some scary people that could be on the levee, and that when there's tourism and tourist money, and this is a beach town, and it's summer's coming.
The scary people are the people given about bogus citations and running people out of public places with guns on their hips.
Yeah, they're scary.
Those are the scary people.
Yeah, those are the scary people. Those are the scariest people, and they're giving the hardest time, actually. They're the biggest bullies on this levee.
Now, how long have you been here, John?
About 3 months.
And have you gotten any other citations, you criminal?
I have.
What have you gotten tickets for?
Well, I was camping, and they rolled up on me in my campsite in the levee, and they said, hey, you can't camp in the levee. And so...
Did they give you a legal place to go?
No, they just said you can't stay here.
Have you tried the homeless service centers? Get on the shelter list so that once they give you a ticket, the city attorney will supposedly dismiss those tickets if you're on the list.
I don't know about the legal ramifications. I'd rather not be part of a program. I have too much of a free spirit, and I prefer to be alone. And I shouldn't be forced to live with a bunch of people in a prison. Or where out or jail or community
shelter,
oh,
please.
Is that what it's called now? It's called a shelter now. Well, I don't want to be part of any community jail shelter.
You should be advised that you can sign up for the shelter without actually having to go. So if you're signed up and then they give you a ticket and you were signed up on the night you got a ticket, the city attorney will dismiss the ticket according to the ordinance. We're having a little trouble making sure that he does that, because the homeless service center is not cooperating very well with that process, but that is happening.
Yeah, so...
In case you want to do that, you should do it not because you're going to go into a shelter, but because it's a way of protecting yourself.
Well, I mean, that's probably good legal advice. It's just when they threaten me with three hots and a cot and TV and chess and basketball and a warm blanket, it's almost like... You know, don't threaten me with a good time. I'll go there if that's where I need to go. But it's a shame that I need to go there to you know, it's all a shame, I think.
A shame and a sham, some would say.
I think it's a sham. I don't think I deserve to be locked up for being homeless.
With those dark glasses and that hoodie, you could be a dangerous guy.
What dark glasses? My eyeball.
Oh, there's the other guy. You got that? He's your friend. Are you guys brothers? Is that what's going on? You're going to rob and beat me, aren't you? Admit it. They're attacking me. Help! Help!
We do have backpacks and we are homeless, so better watch out.
There you go. Telltale signs of criminality. Do you have any reports for Free Radio?
Oh, I just want to say, take back Santa Cruz for that one.
In what sense?
What's Take Back Santa Cruz?
No, I know what it is, but what are you thanking them for?
Oh, for us being criminals because of our backpacks. And
Have you had any actual experience with Take Back Santa Cruz that's come up recently or that you want to bring out?
I see them every day. They run up and down the levee and push their strollers and stuff and, like, have, you know, their normal lives, and they look at us and they talk their little whispers, and I hear what they're saying, I see their looks, and it's just, it kind of makes me feel bad about myself, but, you know, maybe,
How do you know these are Take Back Santa Cruz people?
I just know. I've been following them ever since they started, and it started out with, like, I don't know how many people now, it's 2,000 people strong, and it's all the same crowd, you know. It's just it's splitting the community in half, and it's them against us, and it should all be one community, and this is Santa Cruz, not, you know, Lake Tahoe or something.
And we've been talking with that great humanitarian,
Aries.
Thank you, Aries.
You're welcome.
Aries is a friend of mine.
No doubt. This town, I have noticed some things. I've noticed that half the stuff is shut down. The pool is shut down. The congregation fire pit where we could all be community and have barbecue is all shut down. That's a park that's shut down. Why is the park shut down?
Which park are we talking about?
Well, there's one up on the hill right here by the church. There's a big fire pit there with stumps. Hmm. I've been up there. Well, you might not know about it because it's shut down. You're not allowed to go up there. I climbed the fence and went over there and found that the best community center that you've ever seen is a huge fire pit with stumps around it and picnic tables and barbecues everywhere where people can go up there on a Friday night and congregate as a community and become tighter, knit community. But the police seem like they don't want us to congregate in community. When we congregate for the drum circle, that gets broken up. When we're on the levee past dark, that gets broken up. whenever there's a congregation of people trying to communicate as a community and to congregate and form almost a tighter knit secure community, it seems like that's not good. They want us to shut that down.
Today is Wednesday, so there was a drum circle today, I assume. Did you go to it?
I didn't. Out of fear of being arrested, maybe. I mean, that's just when there's a large crowd in Santa Cruz, that's when they want to roll up, I've noticed.
I know the drum circle has not been dispersed since January, but again, it's gotten smaller, and of course it's on the levee, so it's kind of crunched out there. But it does, I'm told, happen every, 3, 4, 5 o'clock on Wednesday. Today, of course, is Wednesday the 8th. And we've been talking with
John.
Thank you, John.
Sorry about that, folks. It's about 2 to 8, and that really is, that's almost it for tonight. Looks like Uncle Dennis should be strolling into the studio soon. I wanted to also mention a few things which didn't think I'd have time to do. Maybe I will here. I'm waiting for the computer to boot him up, and hopefully that will happen. But yeah, here's the actually it's not coming up. My next show, which is likely to be Sunday, though there's a possibility that I won't be around on Sunday, but there is a controversy that I'm concerned about, I should say an exclusionary policy that I'm concerned about at Bookshop Coonerty, also known as Bookshop Santa Cruz, and that is the so-called visitors' restrooms, which are supposed to be open to everyone in the community. They're actually funded out of public monies, but I was told by the mayor himself, who is also an employee of, a manager of, or closely connected with the Bookshop Santa Cruz, Ryan Coonerty, that I would not be allowed to use the restrooms in there because they're not open to the public, even though that's exactly what the stipulation in the agenda report that I just got through a Public Records Act request states. And I'm going to go look at the contract probably next week to get more details on it. But I think it's important that public funds be used in a non-discriminatory fashion, even if the Coonerty family doesn't like people who are engaged in peaceful protest exposing their clear out the homeless policies and laws that they've passed in this city, the Coonerty family specifically, since 1992, 93, 94. And that was Neil Coonerty, and then there's Ryan Coonerty, who's been continuing in that bad tradition. And that's something that we need to know about. So in any case, I'll be talking about that coming up. And other things, but we have a tall, attractive stranger who's just entered the studio, who has whipped out a bottle of, am I supposed to tell the name of it, or is it a secret?
Sure, why not?
The Saison Dupont, some kind of booze that he's apparently going to tank up on for the next 3 hours while he flips old discs at you. So that's Uncle Dennis. He's going to be here doing that, and who knows what else, perhaps an Earth First update, perhaps a environmental analysis, perhaps an attack on some of the more sacred developers who are simply trying to add a little profit to the Santa Cruz tax base and are being mercilessly pursued by people concerned about, you know, weird plants and animals they claim are endangered. I don't want to get into this. Dennis will pick up the rationale and the cudgels for these kinds of creatures. I'll be back on, perhaps on Sunday, certainly on Thursday. There is also an ongoing protest at the county building in front of the courts.
What now?
Well, they've got two guys in jail, Ed Fry and Gary Johnson, for
criminals, I say. Criminals.
That's what the courts say. They've jailed him for 6 months for the crime of lodging, i.e. falling asleep with a political sign in front
of
the...
You can't do that in this town.
Apparently not.
Don't
no.
try it.
Not
it's illegal.
Well, that's a good point, Uncle Dennis.
Good money to lock you up.
Uncle Dennis has got it right there, and thank goodness people like him are in power, like Judge John Gallagher, who actually did that and pass the sentence on Friday. But there is a small protest happening every morning. I think it happened this morning. It's been happening every morning, every weekday morning since Friday. And it may happen again tomorrow morning. So if you're interested, go down to the county building at 7:30. I don't appreciate that kind of derogatory language in front of your in front of my tape recorder here, Uncle Dennis. In any case,
is this your fag?
I'm paying no attention to the man. He's obviously completely insensitive to minority groups.
You're addicted to the evil weed.
Indeed. You see, there we are. Now he brings up illegal drugs. I don't know what to say.
That's a legal drug. It'll kill you, but it's legal.
I'm going to leave you and your audience here, Dennis, to discuss these issues more deeply. And, again, if you want to reach me, if you've got reports, for example, about Curtis Chad, and if anybody saw the assault on him on May 24th, allegedly by Officer Winston, please give me a call, 423-4833. And that includes Officer Winston. If you'd like to chat about this from your perspective, be happy to air your view on this. In fact, I will try to interview you sometime in the next week to get
the
other side of the story. Of course, we're all human beings here. We're quite reasonable. Some of us are just better armed than others, and armed with the power of the law, the judges, the courts, and so forth. Thanks for being with me and listening to this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I would encourage you to hang tough while Uncle Dennis regales you with tales about rattlesnakes. That's some kind of I'm peering at some of his literature. It's coming up. And he's, a California resident about rattlesnakes, about how to avoid getting bitten. How about making friends with the rattlesnakes? How about some communication with the rattlesnakes instead of viewing them as a menace? We're not going to get into that. In any case, I do want to point out that Congress has finally voted against funding for the Libyan war, but, of course, the Obama regime has said...